life is long. Life is not over when you're 50. And I think there's a tendency, like the arrogance of the young, that we think like, well, it doesn't really matter what we're doing when we're 50 and 60 because basically life is over. But it's not. There are people who start whole new careers when they're 50. My mum has done that. My dad is now finally retired, but he still works every day. And I can see there are so many different things that they've done in their lives. And other people even more so, where they'll have a complete change of career when they're 60 or something. And that's very comforting, like to think like you don't have to have figured it out. Like there's so many things you want to do, you don't have to do them all right now.
Sarah is the founder of Copper and Cloves, which is a health and wellness website where she talks about vegan and healthy food recipes and also leading a healthy lifestyle too. She's also the founder of Copper and Cloves Cafe based here in Indiranagar, Bangalore. So if you're in Bangalore and you'd like to check out some of these dishes she posts about on Instagram, then head on over to a cafe and go check them out for yourself firsthand. In this episode, we talk about the issues with the corporate structure and the rat race, but also talking about how even if you despise the corporate job, there's so many things we learn from it. So we both went through that same path or same trajectory where we had a desk job or a corporate job. And so we were both able to chime in on that. And anyone who's working a corporate job right now would be able to relate to this big time. We also talk about what it takes to understand a community and truly cater to it. No pun intended. We also talk about ideas and startups. And I go into quite a few details regarding my food startup venture, Tuckstan, which I haven't spoken about anywhere else. Yeah, Sarah was just keen on knowing what this idea was about, what my venture is about. And from there, we go on so many different tangents about the importance of understanding ideas, the importance to listen to others' ideas, and how it's only with these kind of brainstorming sessions that you really get to uncover or come up with new ideas that someone else has never looked into or tried out. It's a superb conversation and it's definitely going to get you thinking. And so I highly recommend checking out the full episode. By the way, this show's audio is brought to you by Sennheiser. I'll talk more about our partnership with Sennheiser a little later on in the episode. I guess that's pretty much it. Let's get into a conversation. This is my conversation with Sarah from Copper and Cloves. This is Against the Odds and I'm your host, Akash Damodar. The show is all about inspiring people to take the unconventional path and lead a life that is truly fulfilling and rewarding. Watch and listen as talented individuals take us through their learnings, the challenges they face, and how they continuously adapt to overcome them. What do you want to talk about? No, dude, but it's crazy that, like you said, we started talking, about a year or so ago?
Yeah, it was more than a year ago, yeah.
And like I said, I don't know if it's happenstance or just how things are playing out now, but a lot of those guests that I spoke to back then are basically the guests who are on the show right now.
It takes that long for us to schedule our, yeah, our diaries or sync our diaries. Probably.
Yeah, and I think that's, especially if you're getting into, doing something like this, like a podcast where you actually need others on the show or you need their time as well. It's good learning because, you just assume that, hey, I reach out to 5 guests and you can just make 5 of these episodes happen. It's not a big challenge at all. But then the more you do it is when you realize, I think I probably need to reach out 25 so I can make 5 happen.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And keep that pipeline going constantly.
Yeah. And dude, I mean, I was talking to you trying to understand your journey and I realized there's so many things common.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm looking forward to.
And I was thinking, like, we spoke about how, and again, we'll obviously jump into all of that. We'll go into all of this in depth. But I also realize you also create content. I mean, so all of the stuff you're putting on Instagram at the end of the day is content. Yeah. So the overlap is basically a corporate job to the food business to even creating content.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. Yeah. So I think, before we get into all of that, if you could just introduce yourself to, our audience if they don't know what you already do. I mean, I would have already given you a sort of an introduction. There's an intro part to the episode.
Sure.
But if you can just quickly just talk about what you and Copper and Cloves is doing and anything else as well, please go ahead.
Cool. So Sorry. So I'm Sarah, and I'm the founder of Copper and Cloves, and the co-founder of The Form Co. So Copper and Cloves is a hub, a resource, and a cafe for making plant-based, healthy eating exciting and kind of fun and aspirational. That's my mission, absolute mission, is to try and get people to eat well, to enjoy eating well, to feel inspired to eat well. And I'm using that term eat well on purpose. It's super broad. Mm-hmm. Because whilst I personally am a huge promoter of a plant-based or plant-centric diet, I'm not somebody that thinks that I should tell you like how you should label how you eat. I also try and avoid labels. So plant-based, plant-centric is that more broad term. But yeah, my mission is really all about getting people to want to eat consciously, mindfully, and eat well and live well. Yeah. And that's what Copper and Cloves is all about. And we have a bunch of different branches that I want to kind of talk about. So many different kind of avenues and ways of doing that. And The Form Co. I co-founded with two very talented photographers, cinematographers, Anurag and Pavya, and we founded that and started that a year ago. And it's all about creating content for other brands. We'd been working together on Copper and Cloves for years, and we kept being approached by other brands and to create content. And we sort of wanted to be able to do that, but not kind of under the brand of Copper and Cloves, which then becomes more influencer work, but really work with brands to like realize their own visions and things. So that's the kind of two things that are.
And again, like I keep saying, this whole, the parallels or, you know, what's common, right?
Yeah.
Is the fact that I think both of us are not, we don't have a degree in content or media or food for that matter, right?
Definitely not.
So there's a massive imposter syndrome happening, right?
And
I think a lot of people go through that. And like, I think what we spoke about last time was, you said you never even had this vision because your entire thought process was in probably the most conventional line of, you know, the kind of career that
That's
you had
right.
to follow. You never even thought of making this. This was never an option for the career. Right?
It was never an option. It was never even like, it wasn't even a secret dream. You know, like some people have that secret dream of, you know, being like creating content and running a cafe and having a food business. I didn't even have that because I was so sort of, like you said, the words conventional and traditional, like I felt very that there was a path, you know, that I had committed to because I'd done a degree, a master's, and that I'd taken a job, and therefore like it was set. Mm-hmm. The idea that I would completely change careers at the age of, you know, 30 kind of didn't really occur to me. And in many ways was like a source of not just imposter syndrome, but kind of shame. Like, well, I've done this master's degree from a renowned university, and it's my duty to sort of see that through. And obviously wherever you work, there are people more senior than you that you could aspire to. Like, you know, if my boss, the director is in their 50s and they've worked their way up, you know, that's your role model and that's who you feel you should be. Mm. And the idea that you're going to like, I'm using quotation marks of people who can't see the video, but throw it all away to do something different. But you said something really like really poignant last night, which was, you know, nothing is a waste, right? Everything, even what I learned, even though it may have no direct application in terms of the content of what I learned when I'm learning about whatever complex emergencies at LSE to what I used to consider being quite frivolous, like teaching people how to cook is very frivolous compared to, I don't know, the seriousness of social justice work. But ultimately, there's a lot of things that I learned from that, and I'm still ultimately mission driven and values driven. And I guess a lot of that is stuff which I kind of learned from my career in the NGO sector. But also, I do think that a lot of just like, you know, how to communicate, how to write a really good email when you need to write one, how to kind of stay on top of things. Like, all of that stuff is also learned.
Yeah, so true. And so tell me this, where do you, I mean, I have an answer to this, a fair idea. And again, it's all very subjective as to what each one's experience or learnings look like, right? But then where do you think this whole concept of you looking up to your directors in your corporate job and you wanting to get there, where does that come from? Because I was definitely there too, right out of college, university, I decided to, I mean, I got a nice, well-paying, high-paying, great job, right? And you know, the kind of stories or the kind of conversations around me were, okay, so there's this VP, or there's this GM, or there's this director who's, you know, giving a talk about, you know, what his journey's been like within this company. So let's go and check it out, and, you know, during lunch. And we go check it out, and it's always like, I was busting my ass. I was doing this for like 12, 14, 16 hours every day. And now I'm at this point where, you know, it's all really paying off. And nothing comes easy. All of that's great. Again, the grind's real, of course. Hard work is always going to be there, right? You need to put in the work. But where do you think, I think it's also because we are so impersonable. Impressionable, rather. Let's put it that way. So I think it's because of that we kind of think, like, okay, yeah, I think this is what we need to do. And we tend to just copy the other person, you know?
I think so. I for me, it's just massive social conditioning. I don't think that anyone in my, say, in my family or my school would consciously like, right, we need to make everyone feel like there is one path. And you can take different career paths, but ultimately you join a career and you see it through. And that is what a good person does. I don't think anyone kind of consciously tried to brainwash us, but that is absolutely the message that I received throughout my, I went to an academic all-girls school and I loved school, like, don't get me wrong, and I'm extremely privileged, you know, with my education, that my parents like put everything into my education, and I'm privileged, and I today still experience the benefits of that, so I'm not ungrateful, but I do look back. It's okay to, you know, you can be grateful and also kind of conscious and be able to look at it.
I think you should
I think you should be, because otherwise you're just sort of rose tinting everything, and I don't think that that's also very helpful in terms of things changing and evolving and improving. But I look back at my school, very nurturing, loved it, but very much the message that I received from my education was like, you know, it's 1 year to the next. Like, you have to, you know, you're in the most junior year. You have to get good grades. As you get older, you get more respect. Everything is just like, you work your way up to the top of the school. Then you again start at the bottom of uni. You work your way up. And it's just about getting the good results, like not doing anything too left field. And it really was about just there just being a very clear path. And nobody in my, I mean, obviously, okay, I went to school a long time ago. It's not like anyone was like, so there's actually this thing called social media. We didn't have Instagram and even Facebook at school, which I'm also eternally grateful for because I can't, I mean, school is, being a teenager is hard enough. I don't know how teenagers do it today with social media involved. But anyway, like, it's not like anyone ever thought like, okay, you know, you don't have to know what you're going to do, or maybe you'll have a career which we don't even have a name for. I was never taught, you know, it was like, these are the careers, doctor. And we were it was an all girls school, and they really, in many ways, it was very empowering. You know, they really pushed us. They wanted us to get the best jobs, the best, you know, they weren't like, oh, you girls, like, probably you won't amount to anything. Like, they really pushed us to be academic and successful in our lives. But it was doctors, lawyers, go into finance,
engineers,
and these were jobs with names, right? Names that you could, tangible things. And what I've learned so much, I mean, going into the NGO sector and now this, is like, God, it can be so intangible. You can just not really know. Like, if you ask me what I do, or I ask you what you do, there's probably 10 things that we can name off the top of our heads. And like, which one defines us? It doesn't, you don't even need to.
Right.
You know, like, you don't have to define yourself by the one thing you do. You can do a lot of different things. So I think that, definitely it was that it's that system, you know. My school was like a system, both of the universities I went to were like a system where it was just about getting through the year, doing well. And then I know you mentioned you worked at Deloitte, yeah. And I know Deloitte is very much like that. When you yeah. enter as a graduate, there's literally like levels, and, yeah, you know, a lot of my friends work for Deloitte. There's literally levels. So it's again the same thing. So to break out of that, I think it was really difficult for me. Like I was saying, like, I felt a lot of shame, a lot of that. I was worried about how people would judge me, that I was like
social pressure.
It's just a lot of social pressure, a lot of perceived judgment that, you know, I would be like throwing away things. I'd be going to be doing something which was more frivolous and like silly and like not proper.
Probably a hobby.
Yeah, that it's just a hobby. And like, you know, that really held me back. And the first year I was really shy to like promote myself because I just felt that people would be like, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, you know, like, what is this? This is so silly.
I mean, half of this is, if you think about it, it's all in our heads.
It's all in our heads. And even if it's not, I don't actually care. If you really ask me, like, okay, somebody that you went to university with that follows you on LinkedIn that you haven't spoken to in 3 years is judging you and saying like, oh my God, that's pathetic. Like,
who gives a shit?
I thought you were a really serious person and you were working for this really serious organization and now you're doing this silly thing. But do I actually care? No, I don't. And yet it held me back. Which I think is really interesting. I mean, it speaks to a lot of my probable need for external validation.
No, but we all need it.
Yeah.
I mean, there is this whole internal versus external conflict, right?
Yeah.
And that, I think, you truly have to mature. And again, there is no end goal to maturing as well, right? You don't like attain nirvana when you hit 50. It doesn't work that way.
It's your whole life.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are people who, you know, still face these battles on a day-on-day basis in their 50s as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we have clients who are, you know, now leaving their jobs to want to work with us in media, you know, create their podcasts, create their content, because they're like, okay, I've made all the money I have to. I've reached the echelons of wherever I've reached. Now there's nothing else to this. I mean, this is a never-ending road.
Yeah,
right? So I might as well do what I've always wanted to do. And then they get off, you know, the bandwagon and do this. I mean,
it's so liberating. I'm so happy for them.
Yeah, I know. I mean, better late than never.
Yeah,
right? For sure.
Absolutely. And the other, I mean, the thing that I always now think, I didn't used to think this, is that life is long. Like, you know, actually, life is not over when you're 50. And most of us will live to be more than 100, actually, they think now. And so 50 is only halfway. And so, like, even now, I've founded Copper and Cloves about 4 years ago, right? And it feels like I've been doing it forever, but it's only been 4 years, which in the whole scope of my life is a drop in the ocean. And how maybe I might be doing something completely different in my 60s. Yeah. And I think there's a tendency, like the arrogance of the young, that we think like, well, it doesn't really matter what we're doing when we're 50 and 60, because basically life is over. But it's not. I mean, like you said, there are people who start whole new careers when they're 50. My mom has done that. My mom has had so many different careers. My dad is now finally retired, but he still works every day.
Yeah.
But I, you know, and I can see again, like, there are so many different things that they've done in their lives, and other people even more so, where they'll have a complete change of career when they're 60 or something. And I think that's very comforting, like, to think like you don't have to have figured it out. Like, there's so many things you want to do. You don't have to do them all right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. And we have had guests on the show who have spoken about this at length. It's more like there was a guest who said, hey, you know what? Every decade, I'm like, you know, flipping a switch.
I love it.
I'm just going to do something else entirely. Because we've been socially programmed, right?
That's exactly what it is that we've been talking about. Yeah. That idea that you could have a different career every 10 years is the opposite of what I was taught at school, which is you pick a career, you climb the ladder, you retire.
Yeah. And again, you know, if you think about it, like you said, all of this is not to put you down or to kind of, you know, get you to, you know, go through all of these tough things. It's quite the contrary.
Yeah.
They're actually ensuring that it works out for you, right?
Yeah.
But also, it's almost like a t-shirt, you know, sized approach for everyone.
Yeah.
There you go. This is what works for everyone.
Yeah,
so probably
exactly.
The probability is that it'll work out for you as well.
But right? The nuance is, for lots of us, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, so true.
And even in my, you know, even in my personal life, like, I was I was just always told that, you know, you will settle down and you'll have kids. And that's just, that's what everybody does. There's not really an option.
Mm.
And it's not, again, I mean, at least in the UK, that's, it's not like, it's maybe not as overt pressure as it is in other cultures. I was never told, like, this is your literal role. Mm. And if you don't do it, you'll bring shame on the family. But it was never discussed that it was an option.
Yeah.
And for me, that's been a huge part of the last 5-6 years is realizing I'm a person that isn't going to have children. I don't want to have children. I love children, but I don't want to have them. And that's really made a big difference to also how I see my career.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was always like, I always had this idea, like, I will work. And then when I become a parent, maybe I'll teach because I love teaching. And that will really fit more, that will fit well with being a mother.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also had this feeling at the back of my mind, I'm saying this because it's practical, but I don't really want to be a mother. I've never felt the need to be a mother, but nobody really ever believed me, you know?
Right.
And I think that hugely feeds into, especially for women, thinking about being a, you know, your career and being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Like, it's made a huge difference to my feelings as an entrepreneur to be able to be like, you know what, let's go big with this. Yeah. Because I can, you know, and I have that luxury.
Yeah, yeah. So true. And I mean, I mean, we shouldn't even get into the challenges that women face, because, of course, there are obviously, and that, I think it's a podcast in itself.
Yeah.
But I think one thing I can definitely relate to very, very heavily is, like I said, right? We've not been trained formally in you know what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
But then the avenues to learn are just so plenty to you, right? You can pick it up literally off YouTube, or even by just following Instagram for that matter. If you're following the right people, you can actually pick it up. It'll at least get the seed planted.
Absolutely.
And if you have the actual intrigue to learn, you'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Yes.
There's amazing resources now, and inexpensive courses also, and online courses.
I mean, free courses on YouTube.
And free courses, yeah. To be able to learn a whole other craft.
Yeah.
And also, you know, not just to have to do courses, but to just trust your instinct. Like, if you know you have a knack for something, you know, like people tell you, like, wow, you're really good at this or whatever, like, trust that.
Yeah.
Trust that your knack actually is probably enough that it can take you pretty far in terms of turning that into your profession.
Absolutely. Like trusting your gut.
Yeah. Like you knew you were good at conversations.
Yeah.
And I'm sure no one told you at school, I guess. I mean, podcasts probably weren't really a thing. But like, you know, like tells you at school, like, okay, maybe your gift of connecting with people could actually be something that you really do. You'd be like, well, that's not possible. I'll just be a lawyer. You know,
I mean, so it's funny you say that, because in school, right, I was told over and over again that you can speak really well. You can write some incredible essays. Mm. You know, you're good at all of that. The language is something you're incrementally improving at. Right. But that was never the end goal. Right, because they would push you towards, like you said, those conventional 5 or 6.
Yeah, they'd say these are the skills you can use to be a good lawyer or to be a good doctor or a good consultant.
Right.
They don't think, like, where else could that take you?
Like, right. I mean, and if you think about it, right, like, again, I'm not sure how it's in the UK. I'm pretty certain it's very similar. But the fact of the matter is there's a good chunk of people who just don't end up becoming engineers or doctors because they don't make the cut. And then they decide to do whatever else is left, which is what all of these creative or the art related, all of these other work jobs. And then some of them realize, okay, this is what I was supposed to always do, which is great. A lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people on the flip side don't even realize it becoming doctors, because there's this whole sunk cost issue, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you put in, like you said, you spend what, 3 years in your undergrad and then 2 years in your postgrad. You have a lot of people doing the same thing. They're like four, 5 years in your education. Then you're like, man, I just spend like lakhs of rupees on this. I spent so many years on this. So I might as well use this.
I must do it.
Yeah, I must, rather, right?
But yeah, otherwise it's a waste and I'll be, people will judge me and I'll be ashamed of myself also for wasting that money. I think that is huge.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh my God,
And the idea in life, in your career and in life, this idea that you make up your mind and you stick to it.
Yeah.
That's the message we get, I think, as children, certainly in my upbringing. You choose. You know, you choose. You changing your mind is not considered a good thing. You know, like, oh, and then they just change their mind about their career.
The opposite of determination of sorts.
Yeah, but I really think, like, we have to... The idea that you might change several times over your life and therefore maybe change your career... You know, maybe end a relationship, maybe whatever. It needs to be destigmatized and take away the negative connotations that surround that, I think, because that is something that it's really, really difficult for people. And then they just feel like, okay, but I decided, you know, to go this way. So I have to carry on.
Yeah. I mean, and again, the advice is because you have a lot of people who just don't give it their all. And then decide to, you know, up and about just change or take like a 180. Then that's where the advice is coming from.
Exactly.
But then you can't apply it to literally
everyone. Yeah, because if you do give something your all and then change your mind and give that other thing your all as well, like that's also a valid thing. And that's a very, I hope they start to change career advice at school where, you know, where they tell kids like, follow your passion, give it your all and also remember life is long and you might change your career several times. You might do things at different times in your life. That would be nice.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing in schools these days with careers. I remember taking a test. I don't know whether you ever had to do this here. We had to take this test where we had to answer like 120 like kind of questions with all different multiple choice answers. And then they'd basically spit out a report which told you your career.
Here you go. This is what the algorithm says.
Yeah, this is what the algorithm says. And it was like, the algorithm was funneling you towards, I swear, about 10 to 12 different career buckets.
That's it. Yeah.
It's not, you know, it was so limited. It was so limited. I can't tell you. And I think what they told me I should be was an air traffic controller.
Are you serious?
And when I was like... I don't want to be an air because they were like, you know, you can focus and this thing. I was like, but I don't want to be an air traffic controller. Like I don't even know what I answered because I fundamentally, whatever I do, want to be around people and work with people. And an air traffic controller famously has to really focus exactly on a, you know, it's not really about like your interactions.
That's crazy. I can't believe, so like you said, those 10, 12 buckets. I can't believe one of them was an ATC.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was like a bunch of things like that. Basically, like these things. But that was the one that was at the top for me. And I was like, okay, brilliant. Thanks, guys.
Like a waste of my time. Yeah, 2 hours of doing
this. Seriously.
Taking a quick break from our conversation to talk about our partnership and collaboration with Sennheiser. So today I'd like to talk about the incredible range of headphones that Sennheiser has to offer. So when I got started with my content creation journey, not even got started, I think up until a couple of months ago, I used to use those regular Apple earphones, the wired ones that come with your phone. I used to use that for monitoring, to listen to anything while editing as well. And I thought that, well, you know, I can just use that in the long run. But when Sennheiser equipped us with some of these incredible sounding headphones, like this one or this one, I'll tell you about which models these are. But the moment I started using them, I noticed a stark, obvious difference from the range to the kind of quality and output you get out of these earphones, and it really just made my job monitoring and editing so much easier. So I started using the HD25 lights, the one I'm holding up right now, which is probably one of the most economical and bang for buck option out there when it comes to audio headphones. But then eventually I moved on to the HD25s, which are the classic pair that most people who get into content creation or DJing or anyone who wants to monitor would use. And my God, it's just incredible. There's also this option called HD25 Plus, which is a little more expensive. I think it's just that you can modify the earmuffs or the earpads. But otherwise, I would highly recommend anything in the HD25 range, light, regular, or plus. And I would actually just recommend ordering one of these, using it up against one of the other earphones or headphones that you currently have. And if you don't like it, just return them. But I can assure you, the moment you use them, you're going to be so blown away by the kind of quality it has to offer that there is really no going back. There's also this option called HD400s. Yeah, that's the one I have here, but I will talk about that in another episode because that's an open back headphone, but all of these are closed back. So yeah, whatever it is, go check it out. I'll leave a link to all of these items I just spoke about down in the description below for you to go check out. And if you do end up purchasing, let me know. If you need some support in terms of the right equipment that you need to get started in your content creation journey or to take it to a next level, let me know. Reach out to me on Instagram or email and I'd be glad to help you out. Thanks. Now we go back to the conversation.
One thing that you just mentioned 2 minutes ago is all of these things that are intangible, right? Mm. These things that you learn. Mm. And like you said, all of these other jobs have something that you can touch and feel and say, okay, this is why this is probably the best route to take.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, and again, this might sound very philosophical or whatever.
Yeah.
Most things that, and I was having a conversation with one of our family friends regarding this, but most of the things that you can't touch, most of the things you can't put down on paper or in numbers, because the world is like driven by numbers, clearly, are the things that really matter.
Yeah.
Right? Like I was trying to explain to this family friend of mine, everyone's, in a corporate job is trying to get the best rating, get the best pay hike, get the best bonus, get the promotion, all of that. Now, the funny thing is everyone's like, I'm going to work hard.
Mm.
Now, the question is, how do you quantify hard work?
Mm.
Because hard work doesn't necessarily have to be the number of hours. You can do the same work in 10 hours.
Yeah,
you can
get
the same work done in 20 hours. Yeah. Like I was talking to my team member Vishnu here as well. Like we are editing this video. We can do it in 20 hours. We can do it in 40 hours.
Yeah,
but at the end of the day, it comes down to how much quality we want to take out, how much we want to extract within those 20 hours versus those 40.
Yeah.
Right? So people get confused that, okay, more number of hours would automatically mean that I'm working harder, which in turn would mean better promotions, pay hike and all of that.
Yeah.
But that's not how it works. And the same thing with determination, the same thing with grit, the same thing with anything that you can't quantify.
Exactly.
How do you quantify these things? You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And these things, I think, these intangibles are, I think, what you need to be focusing on earlier.
Yeah. Right? Exactly.
Yeah. Because those things will guide you towards what is tangible, I think.
Exactly.
Right?
And
oh man, it's crazy. The more you think about this, it's like a rabbit hole of sorts.
I know. Definitely. I feel like maybe that is one of the future things that we can also both be involved in. It's just like helping people who are young at the beginning of their careers.
Yeah.
Not think about their career as linear and not be constrained by either social pressures, social norms, you know, the current rhetoric, which we now know is going to change every 5 years, if not less, in terms of
how, I'd say definitely less.
You know, definitely less, because already the rules have changed so much since I entered the workplace compared to now. Compare that to when my parents entered the workplace. Like, it's crazy.
Oh, man, it is. And I have these long conversations with my wife regarding this. And my main intent with this podcast and with what I'm creating here is to really help people as much as I can, right? But literally at the crux of it, how can we help young people, right?
Yeah.
And if you think about it, like people getting into universities, they're doing it at their tail end of their teens.
Mm.
So like 18, 19. Okay, but again, Indians might not really understand this, but most of the Indian education is taken care by the parents.
Yeah.
Right? You have your parents paying whatever it is, like a couple of lakhs or a couple of crores, depending on the kind of course and the university you pick. And that's okay. It's not really a loan per se, right? Because the parents want something nice and good for you. But if you look at the West, if you look at the US or any place in the West for that matter, people are taking on loans when they still haven't figured out what they want to really do. And this is like a, again, that is a serious sunk cost. And that's going to be playing in their heads throughout their lives.
Yeah.
I mean, we like sitting at our age, we're still not sure about what we want to do.
Yeah. And being comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And being comfortable with not being able to really explain exactly what it is that I do, exactly what, like, I have goals. I always have goals. And I have a really clear, my mission is very, very clear in my mind. I have short-term goals that I'm really, really passionate about. But my long-term goals about how I'll contribute to the mission that I'm really passionate about,
it's still up for debate.
I'm comfortable. Yeah, yeah. I'm comfortable with saying, like, right now it feels like it will be via the vehicle of Copper and Clones and the Formco. But I am fully open to the fact that in a year or even, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, it might look very, very different how I'm working towards that.
Right, right. So take me through some of those initial days of Copper and Clothes. When I think you said you used to go to these open fairs, or,
yeah,
you know, and
God,
you used to just sit
like
there.
Like in tech parks. It was so funny. So like I said, you know, my one very good piece of advice that I got given was like, you know, just start, just do things. So I sort of, you know, like I told you, I was starting to have these ideas that I wanted to start. I wanted to do something in food, and I'd gone part time, but I was still holding on to my identity as someone who worked in the development sector. Luckily, I was taken on as a consultant, which allowed me a lot more freedom in terms of time, but was not so scary that I was like, I've given up my career to do something which I don't know what I'm going to do, because that would have been, like we talked about, my social programming was still way too strong to be able to do that. So in the early days, you know, I was just like, I know I want to do this, but it's in my nature to want to have something tangible before I start to tell people that that's what I'm doing. You know, I need a business plan. I need to like do something proper. Mm. And then someone was just like, just start small, just do anything. And I was like, okay, right. And that is the best advice that I have been given. And so I was just like, you know what? I have to do something. I was going back to the UK for a long thing because I hadn't seen my family in a long time. So I was going back for like a month. I was like, before I go back to the UK, I have to just do at least one thing so that I can feel that I have started something that I can sort of put a shape to and I can feel rather than it just being something in my head, because the more it's in my head and the more I mind game myself about that scared thing. So I was like, okay, right. I need to just sign up to, I was making lots of food like granola, energy balls, and people were saying they really, really liked it. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to sign up to one of these fairs, but I have to do it before I go back to the UK.
You're already making it for others.
Yeah, I was sort of making it for others, but it was more like, you know, I was giving it to my friends. A couple of people have been like, I will buy this on the regular if you make it on the, you know, if you make it regularly. And I was like, okay, cool. So that sort of already happened. But, you know, I was largely, you know, I wasn't doing anything. I hadn't monetized anything and I hadn't, you know, branded anything. I hadn't created a brand. I was like, I'm going to go to a fair and I have to do it before I go back to the UK, which is in July or whatever. And I was like, okay, what's happening in the next month? And the only thing I could find was like a kind of fair in a tech park. So it's not even like it was Soul Sante and Sunday Soul Sante. Like it wasn't a big thing like that. It was literally one of these ones, you know, it was Earth Day or something, one of these World Earth Days that no one actually knows. And it was, you know, there was basically like two lines of stalls. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it. So I made so much granola and all these like little energy balls, which are kind of like healthy laddu kind of things. And, you know, I went there and I looked up online, like Pinterest, how to make a stall look good. So I bought all this like jute cloth and I had these like, you know, wooden crates that I was balancing my jars. And so the stall looked really nice, actually. And so I went there and like most people were coming down in their lunch break just to, because it's something to do for them, right? And they were just like, so what is this?
That's your audience though, right? That's that's your customer
Absolutely.
Base.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it was honestly, it was one of the best things I did, because even though it was very, very small scale, you know, it tangibly, it didn't, you know, it's not like it was, oh, wow, it really built my brand or whatever. But it gave me that experience that I am doing something, right? Right. I have gone, I have made my things. I've had to source packaging. You know, I think I'd handwritten on every single package that I sold, like the name, the ingredients and everything. And I didn't have a brand name at that point.
I was wondering, what are you selling this? What is the banner? There was no banner.
But I'd made the store look nice. I knew the look and feel. The brand name came later.
It's that lady with the aesthetic
lady with the really nice jute, all natural stuff. Because I was like trying to show it was organic and natural or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, but people were literally asking me because, you know, it's not that well known, or it certainly wasn't in India compared to in the UK. People are like, what is this? I was like, it's granola. They're like, oh, what is that? And I was like, okay, wow. So actually it's oats and it's nuts and it's seeds. And I've baked it with, you know, coconut oil and jaggery. And I've mixed all spices in there. So why don't you try it? And I built, over the course of the day, I built a sales patter, right? Like I learned what to say. I watched people like, you know, what was it that lit something up in their eyes when I was talking to them. And I managed to sell out of everything, even though no one knew, like I said, what an energy ball was, what granola was. I'd managed to take a few numbers of people that wanted to. And it was it was very small. I think I barely broke even if I did at all. But, you know, I was really proud of myself because I put myself out there. I was completely out of my comfort zone. Now I can do that kind of thing. Like, if you gave me a store right now, I could set it up right now and just do it. Like, I'm so used to doing it now. But at the time, it was really, you know, and it sounds so, and again, I felt silly, you know. It's not like I was an 18-year-old girl or, you know.
With a lemonade stand.
With a lemonade. I mean, I was already 30, in my 30s. And so I felt like silly. I did. And that is not because I was silly. It was just because I felt silly. It was in my mind. I'm not saying to anybody who wants to start something, it is not silly to start small, no matter what age you are. But to the socially brainwashed, professional, serious person that I was with a serious job, it felt like I was doing something frivolous. And so to overcome that and to actually get into it. And then by the end of the day, to have learned a sales pattern that worked. And that, you know, and then I decided to call it chai spiced granola because I used a lot of the spices that are in chai, like cinnamon, cardamom and cloves, you know, ground up and stirred through. And then you bake it and, you know, it kind of comes together in little clumps and you sell it. And it's great to have with breakfast with like yogurt or, you know, curd, or to sprinkle it on top of like a smoothie bowl, or to have it as a snack. And, you know, I'd learned that thing like, okay, I was telling people they should have it for breakfast. They were like, but I have dosa for breakfast. I was like, oh, yeah, maybe you could have it as a snack. They were like, oh, yeah, if I was sitting at my desk, I could have this with some fruits to make it more filling. And I was like, exactly. So then the next person that come along, I'm like, this is a great snack. I've stopped selling it as a breakfast because I've realized I'm not selling to British people, you know. And I was still only been in India like a year and a bit at that time. So I wasn't thinking maybe as clearly about how to sell to people who had a different lifestyle to me. So it was really, that was the early days. And I did lots of little things like that in the early days, but that was the first thing. And then I decided it was about events. That actually what I loved the thing I loved the most about the stall was about setting up the stall, making it look beautiful and talking to people. That's what I love doing, you know. I loved seeing how they react to the food. I love being able to explain to them why it was healthy, what difference it might make to them. And so that was definitely why I sort of started to think like, I want to create experiences for people where I can connect with them, because you don't have very much time when you're selling. But creating an experience where you don't have to sell, they've already bought the ticket, so then you can actually just talk to people and really make more of an authentic connection is more appealing. So that's when I started thinking, you know, I want to run an event. And I was used to going to wellness oriented events in London, and I was lucky, my sister worked in wellness. She worked on the first biggest kind of wellness festival, I guess. So I was getting a lot, even after I'd left London, a lot of information about what was happening in the wellness scene in London. And the thing which me and her love to do is like, you know, go to a yoga class and then grab a coffee and breakfast afterwards. You don't want to just go to a yoga class and go. And these events had been to one called the Yoga Brunch. I was like, I'd love to create that experience here because I'd moved to a new city, you know, to Bangalore, and everyone's like, yeah, we'll go out for a beer, which is great. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love going out for a beer, but I don't always want to do that. And that's not actually always the best way to meet people, because a bar is not actually that easy to meet people. People are in groups.
Yeah.
People are in a different mindset.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to run an event.
This podcast would be very different with alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, alcohol changes the nature of your connections. Yeah. And I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. In some ways, it's amazing. It breaks down barriers.
Yeah.
It removes awkwardness. But in other ways, it leads you in a direction of which I felt that I was, all of my friends, you know, when you have really like friends like that I had because I'd grown up in one country, you know, you developed connections that were way more than nights out.
Mm.
And so connecting isn't that easy when you're new to a place. And I thought that, you know, doing a yoga class together and then sitting around and having a communal brunch. So it's not like you then get your brunch and you go and sit in the groups that you came in. It's a communal brunch. So if you've come alone, you'll meet people. Maybe you've come in as a group, but you sort of also meet people. And that was my dream. And, you know, I don't know whether this is something you regularly talk about on the show, but the idea of just holding that dream and being able to picture it and feel what it would feel like was quite a long, you know, I was imagining it for a really long time. And the way I feel that it then sort of manifested was I ended up talking to somebody at a wedding who just casually mentioned that there was this beautiful space and, you know, that she really wanted it. She was an architect. She really wanted it to be used for events, and it wasn't being used for events currently. And I was like, oh, that's so funny because I have this event. I've never done it, but it's so clear in my mind. And I was able to describe it to her in such a way. And she was like, it's perfect. And that's how we started. So,
damn.
Yeah, it was really like, you know, when you can really feel something and like imagine it, even if you don't know how you're going to do it, you haven't found the space, but just making it happen by holding it dear. And then you spot the opportunities when they come along.
Yeah, so true. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
But that's been I'm sure there's a lot of learnings and a lot of unlearning as well in this whole process,
right?
Where, like you said, this whole programming, getting past that is not like a one night, you know, effort. It's like you're still dealing with that.
Yeah. Even today, I'm still dealing with it. It's so funny.
No, but like you said, I think now if you had to set up a stall, it's that easy. Yeah.
That I could do. So now it's like, you know, what is the next challenge? The thing which feels completely out of my comfort zone. And the more you do these things, the more, you know, they become your comfort zone. You have to find something else that's going to push you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Oh my God. And I completely agree, completely concur, because when I got out of Deloitte and I had to do this, right? My concept's was very simple, and I still think...
Yeah, tell me about your food concept. I want to hear about your food journey.
So, the idea was, because I was in a corporate environment, right, and set up, I was working with the leadership very closely.
Yeah.
Right? And we had a whole bunch of events.
Yeah.
So there were, and all of these events, well, people only talk about how good the events were based on the food, obviously, right? So I had a lot of experience planning a lot of these parties, planning a lot of, you know, even when the leadership came down from the US, all of that, it's like, you know, figuring out what happens behind the scenes to ensure everything goes great, right? Yep. When the party you know, actually starts. Or even just a lunch for that matter.
Yeah.
And I realized that in India, it's you either have your regular caterers.
Yeah.
Which is your, you know, they bring their Ben Murray's. They have their regular utensils.
They just have the regular thing. Yeah.
Or you go to your five-star hotels.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is nothing in between.
In between, which and, is a unique experience.
Yeah. And that's where I started realizing, like, no one cared where the food was being sourced from. Like, unless you went to party at a pub, you know the food's coming from there.
Yeah.
But if you had something happening at in your office, well, you know, none of the employees were like, okay, great, what's the item? Like, they don't care where it's coming from, because they know it's going to be just another caterer.
Yeah.
Right? So what I decided to do was really tap into that market.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out that
genius gap.
Yeah. Yeah. And because I was on the other side, I was the person handling all of these things. I was the employee eating, right?
Yeah.
And Swiggy and Zomato was like, you know, was everywhere, right? So people are constantly ordering from these places. I was like, okay, so you know these brands. There's a rating or a level and there's a reason why you go back to them again. Is there a way I can bring those brands and really revolutionize this area?
Yeah, that's so clever.
Yeah, so that was the concept. And I think it's probably because I realized I have to do a whole lot with what's happened with COVID. So till the time COVID hit, everything was great.
Yeah.
We were doing incredibly well. We got a lot of... So the concept started with what you did, which was I literally went to an office space, sat down there with a desk. I had... So I had a banner and a brand name.
You were better than me. You were more on it than me because you created a banner.
But again, Sarah, I think the beauty of this whole thing is the logo, the brand doesn't matter.
Yeah. It doesn't. It doesn't matter until way later.
Yeah, way
later.
At the
beginning, just start.
Yeah. I mean, you can change the name 5 times.
I did, yeah.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. So we get caught up in that whole, you know, that trying to perfect everything before, you know, getting it on the ground, which is so weird. And we all go through those challenges. Right, but I was like, my wife's into digital marketing, she's a creative person, so I said, hey, can you help me with a design? She put together something. I said, done, this is good. Let's just go with this.
And we
got started with that. And the concept was I bought food from a couple of restaurants which I knew were hit with an office space, and I brought the food. So for instance, Glenn's Bakehouse was one of our partners, Leon Grill was one of our partners, and there were a couple of big names as well, all the Swiggy names are all you know, with working with us. We had about 40 to 50 restaurants across Bangalore, vendors right? And I brought food to sell it on the counter. So I had like a heating unit, I kept all of that there, the desserts, it didn't matter. So I was selling, that was the concept. What was weird was doing the whole sitting there and exposing yourself.
Yeah, it's so exposing.
Oh my God, it is so weird. Exposing.
And it's so different when you're a Deloitte employee. Like, hi, I'm a consultant at Deloitte. You have, that is like something in front. When you're just like, hi, I'm Akash and I'm just doing this. It's like, it's so exposing.
Oh, I'm just a food enthusiast.
Yeah,
that's it.
Exactly.
So, did you study food? I'm like, yeah, maybe just by looking at it.
Yeah. And it's like, do you have an MBA? You're starting a business? No.
No.
Do you have any experience in business? No. Are you a chef? No. And it's just like more and more. Just like, I'm really unqualified to be doing this.
Yeah. So that was really uncomfortable. Mm. But my aim with this was not, and again, through the course of being at Deloitte and college, university, all of that, I was trying a lot of side gigs, a lot of, you know, small businesses.
Oh, that's good.
And which was more because I was just intrigued.
That's cool.
Right? It wasn't to really make money.
That's super impressive.
And some of these things worked, some of them didn't. It didn't matter because all of these things, like we discussed earlier, it's not a waste.
So you had that entrepreneurial spirit from uni. That's super impressive. I definitely didn't. I mean, I just... When I wasn't in a lecture, I was mostly just like lying on my sofa, eating junk food and watching like Deal or No Deal. Like it was, just, I'm really impressed with people that like had side hustles at uni. What were the kind of things you did?
So my aim was to eventually get an MBA, which was basically the same route you had taken, to get a postgraduation degree. But I realized I need a couple of years of experience before you get an MBA. That's the way it works. And I'm talking about getting into the cream of creams, like the top 25 universities in the world, right? So, like LSE is definitely one of them, right? So at one point, I remember I was like, instead of, you know, spending like a crore or a crore and a half into all of this, why not just take a portion of that and try to figure it out practically? That's the way I thought. But I wasn't even willing to, I didn't even know where to get that portion, right? Where do I get this money from? But the idea was I'll just try it practically. Probably I'll learn all of these things along the way, what I would learn in a classroom environment. And this whole sitting there and exposing yourself is basically marketing, is sales, is everything. Is customer interaction, it's everything, right? It's operations. So it was more about learning that. And I took a sabbatical from work and I was doing this. I'd taken like 3 months off work and my wife and I traveled to Japan. And I was like, I'm getting back and I need to do this because there's no work to go back to. So I'm off. I need to do this. Somehow got my 3 months off. And this is something that no one does, which is to take a break from work.
Sabbatical, yeah.
Because they're like, I'll be behind in the whole rat race and ladder and all of that shit, right?
Yeah. So again, anyway, life is long.
Yeah, exactly.
You have time. Take a sabbatical. if your company offers a sabbatical or you can afford to do it,
You should.
Because life is long.
Yeah, so I got back and I just did that.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another. I did this over and over again. Showed up in different offices with stalls.
Yeah.
I told them that we can help out with your daily lunches. We can help out with, you know, like a subscription model. We can work with these brands who didn't even have subscription models for that matter. And we can kind of, you know, curate something that, you know, works for you. And again, eventually got to a point where we got cafeterias entirely for us.
Wow. Yeah. So then you could like curate the... Cool.
It's like a food court of sorts.
Within office. A campus.
Yeah.
Like
which
a
is what
one.
People need.
That is what they want. They don't want...
The regular stuff.
They don't want
exactly.
just white label catering. They
exactly.
want brands.
Yeah. And it's a big hit with corporates.
Yeah.
Like the moment they see this brand, like, wait a sec. Yeah. Are you serious? This is what
because
I order.
It's attractive to their staff. It's literally going to be seen as a plus point of why they would want to work at Absolutely. Deloitte over whatever, the competitor. Like, because it would be like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than just like, oh yeah, it's the same old like,
yeah,
I'll either have veg, non-veg, and it's
exactly.
in those trays.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah,
trays
yeah,
and
yeah.
everything is pre-proportioned.
Compartmentalized.
For,
yeah. oh man. Yeah, this is just gets me thinking and reminiscing. But so eventually we closed a deal with one of the biggest tech companies in India for that matter. And
ooh, congrats.
It was, but. COVID also closed the deal and completely like, you know, like whatever.
Oh, it came at just... Yeah. And, you know, people always talk about what was hit the most badly and restaurants, cafe, like the hospitality industry for sure. But everyone, like tech parks in themselves as a category, I feel are like the single biggest full casualty of COVID in a way that because they can't... Like we pivoted, you know, and we can start doing delivery and whatever, but tech parks... You know, those aren't their only outlets. So they're not going to become cloud kitchen. I mean, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so sorry. That's such a good idea. I mean, I know, like you said, nothing is a waste.
And
you only learn. But it's really, really a casualty of COVID.
And actually, the next couple of months after that was just trying to figure out how we can stay in the game long enough so that when it comes back, we already have all these things going for us. But then it went on for way too long. And we were just,
I don't
know,
think tech parks will ever come
exactly.
back to what they
the
were.
Entire
That's a problem.
Ecosystem of Bangalore's changed,
it's
right?
It's completely changed. You can see it, you know. And I think restaurants will come back because people want to go out to eat. But tech parks won't come back because people don't want to necessarily go back to work 6 days a week. They may want to go 1 day a week or 2 days a week.
And companies have figured you can still work from home.
From home. Yeah. And therefore, you know, tech parks will...
The landscape's changed, right?
Change and I don't think there will these big physical campuses I don't think yeah, will survive.
My God. So again it's I think all of this happens for a reason. I'm like being again trying to look at
absolutely.
It half full.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Completely.
You know? So in that gap, again it was like a year of trying to figure out how I can stay in the game, pivot, try a couple of things out. We actually with some of our clients, maybe they have a 50 member team and they're spread across Bangalore, let's say, we can have food delivered to their doorstep. We had a partnership with Swiggy, which kind of enabled us to do that. So we pivoted, we tried a lot of things, but it was a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of money for meager returns.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's not really worth it.
Yeah.
So I tried to keep that going while I also started off with the podcast. And that's what happened, right? So this whole thing wouldn't happen if the pandemic didn't hit.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Like I said, I'm grateful to all of this for sure.
100%.
But yeah, I think I would never be, you know, able to do this if I didn't expose myself there, you know,
exactly.
the thing. It all comes back to that.
Exactly.
So it's all a learning.
Because if you were still working for Deloitte at the beginning of the pandemic, I'm sure... you would have clung on to that job because it was you'd already done the scary bit when the economy was more normal. And
oh yeah, for sure.
I always think that like,
I mean, if my plans were to take off in 2020, there's no way I would have done it. No way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I mean, that's how we're programmed.
Yeah, exactly. Right? But it was the niche The gap that you saw is so true. I mean, I can so see. I used to work in a big, big office. I mean, you know, the Teach for India office was in the Goodrich building in Bombay, like a big, I can see that what you're saying is true. Like, yeah. I think back to then, and if you'd had a couple of branded stores, they sort of had the queues, yeah. and no one really, you know, yeah. like.
And it's all about being super dynamic in the sense the yeah. menu changes every day, yeah. the kind of items. We even, so the place where we were supposed to set up had, I think, different vendors or restaurants on different days too, mm, yeah. which is really mixing it up.
And then it feels more like the kind of thing which people pay very good money to go to, which is like flea markets, you know, the kind of things where things change and yeah. like you know, like these, I don't know whether you know, in the UK, like in London, there's a lot of these, like what they call, there's a brand called Street Feast. Mm-hmm. So they take, it's so cool. If you ever visit London, so it's the one place I tell people to go, like covered markets kind of thing. So they'll okay. take over like a parking lot or like a warehouse or a disused warehouse. And they'll build like lots of small stores with a hatch, right? And then in the middle, they'll put loads of communal seating areas, like picnic tables and stuff. Yeah. And they'll have bars, food, and a space for live music. It'll be open like 4 days a week, like maybe Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And like you queue to get in and you can go. So then like I'm plant-based, right? And, you know, my partner wants to eat something else. And my other friend wants to eat a burger. And my other friend wants a pizza. And we can all go get our food and eat in the middle. And they're all different things. And they're brands, like yeah. you say, like cool, the best pizza. This, but then as it started to gain traction, they were dealing more with like upcoming, like home chefs that they saw. And Got then it. They would pick them and coach them into being able to run a small thing like this. And you have a ready-made footfall.
Yeah.
And so they'd curate it. So there'd be someone doing like wings, pizza, burgers, but also like
so like
Asian.
A co-branded sort of a
yeah,
thing, right?
Yeah, kind. I mean, they would all have their own brand yeah, there, yeah. but it would be like at Street Feast. Yeah. And Street Feast was a brand in and of itself. And because there were also bars, like someone might be doing beer, like craft beer, someone else might be doing gin and tonics, you know, you could really create a party atmosphere. And it's honestly my dream to bring something like that. And it's yeah. similar, like, yeah, you know, it's like the work version, yeah. you know, that you were saying, that to yeah. have something like that in a tech park is just, you know, people can't believe their luck. It's like, well, this is amazing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I noticed certain tech parks where they already had food courts. And again, nothing, very static there yeah. as well, right? So, but people still went to the food courts over their regular
over the
corporate.
Regular catering, yeah. yeah.
So, for yeah. sure. But anyway, maybe we'll come back to that. Maybe we'll eventually work out a scheme to help out 17 and 18 year olds. Maybe all of these are just, you know, like we said, just ideas that
exactly.
waiting to happen.
Exactly. I love thinking about it. And, you know, one of my, I take a lot of inspiration from other people's good ideas. And I think what you just, you know, the niche, the gap in the market that you saw is such a good idea. You know, the Street Feast that I know in London, I know it works. I mean, at least pre-COVID, but even when I went back in August last year, there's lots of them, not just the brand Street Feast, but other ones. And they were again full, you know, yeah. and it's like a great night out. And so that, and all these ideas, you know, and I just think like I'd really love to do that. I'd mm. really love to bring that mm-hmm. to Bangalore because it's good for the you know, it's good for the businesses, small businesses. It's a great way to start. It's a great way to get known without just being a home chef sending meals out, but it's a great way to start a proper food brand. It's also great for the consumer because you have choice and it's a place to meet friends and coalesce. So that's a great thing as well. And it's just a really good thing for a city because it feels like there's something vibrant happening. Yeah. And so like just to hold that idea dear, you know, dear in your heart and just think like, okay, I have no idea. Like right now, obviously it feels crazy because, you know, there are still some COVID restrictions and maybe things are just getting back on their feet. But just to hold it dear, like maybe in 5 years' time, you and I will start that, you yeah. know, you never know, like yeah. you literally don't know. But I love just whenever you think that there's a good idea, like just planting that seed. I would love to take that idea out of the tech park space and into a more social kind of, and it'd be like, what do you do tonight? Like, let's just go there because it's, you know, it's changing all the time. It's vibrant. It's a way to meet people.
Yeah, and everyone's looking for new things, right?
I just want to go to the same things all the time. And I have to say, I love Bangalore dearly, but like,
there's only so much you can do here, right?
There's so many brew pubs. It's just there. It's not the only thing to do, you know?
Yeah, my God, that's so true, man.
Thank you for listening or watching this episode. This is part one of my conversation with Sarah. Part two will be out pretty soon, so stay subscribed or hit that follow button if you're listening to this on audio. If you did like the episode, and I'm hoping you liked it, and that's why you've stuck around till now, then consider hitting that like button, smashing it, like how Peter McKinnon would say it if you're watching this on YouTube. But if you're listening to this on audio, then consider leaving a rating and review. There's an option to rate and review the show right below the podcast cover art. Takes only about 10 to 15 seconds, but really, really helps get the show in front of more people. Huge shout out to Red Music Box. It's basically the place where we shot and recorded this episode. Super professional setup. Amazing place if you need to record your audio content, or if you're a musician and you're looking at recording some of the pieces you have composed, then I would actually recommend heading down over to Red Music Box, which is India's first Neumann certified studio, and giving it a shot. Easily the best studio I've been to in Bangalore. So yeah, consider heading down over if you are a content creator or a musician yourself. That's it. I don't know where I'm scrolling. I don't have anything else here. So yeah, I guess that's pretty much it. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you on the next episode. Cheers.